to the North Peace MB Church Roundtable Podcast. For more information, visit npmbchurch.com.
Well, you are listening to the North Peace Roundtable Podcast,
Ooh.
Episode 39?
I gotta keep
better track of that. Oh, man. But thanks for tuning in, and my name is Andrew, and with me as always is Corland.
Hello, hello.
And, oh,
Cameron.
Cam is no longer with us.
he's not with dead. Us, but in heart yeah. and spirit.
We had a little communication mishap. If you watched or listened to last week's, or I guess the week before, I was quarantining, so we Zoomed the podcast. And so this morning early, right before we recorded, Cam said, hey, can you like send the Zoom link or is it the same? I'm like, the Zoom link? Oh, shoot. I never said that. Anyways. So Cam is being a good husband and a good father and staying home and helping out around the house this morning. So if you are new to the podcast, we the three of us usually, but today it'll be two of us, try and unpack a theological thing or something from the Bible,
or some Christianese thoughts or anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, or sometimes we talk about Santa or like questions that people send in. So before we start, though, I have to tell you, Corlin, I saw the funniest video I've seen in a long time. Have you ever watched those like worship fails? There's videos on YouTube where just like mistakes that the guy drops his guitar or
yeah.
like the one guy's playing in the wrong key and you're like, ha, ha, ha. But I saw one, and so the lyrics, and some of you listening might think this is pretty like juvenile, but the lyrics were, why should my heart fear what you have defeated? So the guy's singing and he goes, why should my fart hear what you and the caption was, oh, so close.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But he just kept going. I'm like, good for you, man. Just pretend that it didn't happen.
That's so the best way to handle that.
It made me think, like, you've done some public speaking and you've preached a few times. Have you had any moments like that where you, like, messed up a word or, like, put your foot in your mouth?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Whether it was while I was acting or preaching, there's definitely times where, like, whether you stumble over a word or whether you completely mess up or because I haven't done it a ton when I was preaching the one time, I went to look up to like actually speak to the audience or whoever you want to say, whoever was listening. And I went to look up so that I could make connection. And when I went to look back down, I had completely lost where I was. So I had to kind of just stand there and read from my transcript for a bit and figure out where I was again.
Oh, man.
And like, of course, when you're on stage, those pauses feel like an eternity.
Oh, yeah. A 2-second pause feels like,
yeah.
5 minutes.
Yeah. So I don't actually know how long I paused there, but yeah, it definitely does happen.
Yeah. The best one that I have done is early, like my first year of interning. I was preaching at the, like a youth event, and I can't remember exactly, but instead of New International Version, I said New International Virgin. So it was something like, you know, and, you know, whatever Bible translation, right? I mean, I use the New International Virgin, and of course, it's teenagers, so they're like, ooh, you said
yeah.
virgin. So I was like, oh, man. Yeah. So anyways, that cracked me up. I remember we'll get into some theology, but this is just good.
Yeah.
I remember when I was in a preaching class in seminary, there was a guy, and so the prof would, you know, give whatever lessons on how to preach, and then you had to do it in class. So this guy was like, I'm going to do it without notes. And he was like, he was one of those guys that, okay, like, who are you trying to impress? But he was like, I got no notes. So he got up there, and we were only supposed to give like a 12-minute mini sermon.
Yeah.
And so he's going, and he's got no notes, and then probably like 6 or 7 minutes into it, he just kind of stops, and you can see him staring off, and you can tell he's trying so hard to remember where he was.
Yeah.
And it was probably a good 30, 40 seconds, and then he just, yeah, I guess I'm done. I can't remember. And he went and sat down. And like, it was really, really hard not to be like, guess you should have used your notes.
That's called being led by the Spirit, yeah. Andrew. He had nothing left to say.
Oh, man.
That reminds me of the second time I preached. And some people listening might even remember it. It was in the first service. I was preaching, and I finished my sermon. And that, for whatever reason, it just was it. That there was nothing left. I forgot to pray. I forgot. I was just like, I like finished reading, and it was the most awkward transition I've ever done in my life. Because I like looked up, and I was like, and that's all I've prepared?
Yeah, so right.
Have a good rest of your day, and God be with you. And like walked off the stage. And like everybody in the church just like watched me walk off the stage. Man. And I was like, oh.
So this is the last story. But we have a friend that goes here that's preached before, and I think he actually listens to the podcast, but I made fun of him because the last time he preached, it was Thanksgiving, and I don't know if you listened to that one, but he finished, and it was a great sermon, like, and then he prayed, and then to dismiss everybody, he said, well, happy Thanksgiving, and, yeah, that's it. Or something like that. I was like, oh, man.
I feel like there's something charming about endings like that.
Yeah.
Because it's so human. Like,
totally.
Like, I remember as a kid thinking pastors were kind of just these saints with an invisible halo on their head. They're more than human almost. And then, like, as I get older, I realize, like, okay, yeah, they're kind of...
The Lord bless you and keep you. Right? It's always this eloquent ending.
Yeah. It's like, okay, he practiced that in front of the mirror too many times this week.
Oh, man.
But anyways.
Anyways, yeah, enough about that. So today we want to talk about the idea or like the biblical doctrine of the new heavens and the new earth. And so some of you listening, maybe that's kind of like a new concept. Like what? A new heaven and a new earth?
Mm-hmm.
So and I'll start by asking you this, Corlin, like growing up and then I'll answer this too. What was your concept of, and maybe it was something that was taught or just something like it was just an idea I had about, what happens when you die or even more so like what's the end goal of Christianity? Right.
Yeah. I really don't know if it was something that was like specifically taught in the sense of like, if you were to take a test, you had to like, written response say this is exactly what happens.
Yeah.
But I do remember thinking that heaven was like it was the end game goal for a Christian. That's what we were striving to get to. However, I definitely remember that there was like thinking that there was a massive separation between heaven and earth in physical distance.
Okay, gotcha.
So thinking like when you died here on earth, there would be a legitimate physical distance to travel to get to heaven.
Gotcha.
Whether that was dying and being put 6 feet under and then having to go up into the clouds,
yeah.
Whether that was further, whether that was somewhere in space. That's kind of what yeah. I thought. As I got older, though, some of those theories started to not make sense because do the people in Australia still travel there up or do they go down because it's our up? Like,
yeah.
Legitimately, yeah. It sounds stupid, but stuff like that. I was like, well, that doesn't quite work because if heaven is a singular place that everyone travels to, not everyone could just go up to get there, right? Like,
yeah.
It didn't quite, at least for me, some of those things didn't quite line up in my head. And so it wasn't until I was a bit older and started actually reading the Bible and questioning some of those things that are, I don't even know where they come from in Christianity. Because it's not just our church at the MB where kids would think that or any church in Fort St. John or, you know, Alberta.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where you are. We all seem to kind of gravitate towards heaven is this city in the clouds that's just going to come down to us one day or something mm-hmm. like that. So I don't know. What about you? Did you?
Yeah. My understanding, and it's like you said, I don't remember if this was like specifically, I would say it was probably yes, taught in Sunday school. But then it's, I think a lot of our views of like heaven is shaped by culture, mm-hmm. like The Simpsons and shows like that, where it is a floaty, cloudy place up there, right?
Yeah.
And so I remember growing up and believing, like, the end game was you want to go to heaven when you die. There was nothing really about, like, earth. It was like, that's not important. What's important is
heaven.
Say the prayer so that you get to go to heaven and be with God.
You don't want to burn forever.
It, so. Yeah, and it was kind of pictured as like it's up there somewhere, right? And I get why, because lots of times in the Bible there's that kind of language used, right? Like I went up to heaven, or like God looked down from heaven. So there's that kind of language used. So I think we just kind of glommed onto that and were like, well, heaven's up somewhere and hell's down somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's actually like a very medieval, if you think of medieval paintings of heaven and hell.
Yeah.
And you should Google afterwards just, you know, medieval paintings of the afterlife. Because oftentimes it's like, okay, at the top, bright clouds, harps, wings.
Yeah.
And then you've got earth, which is like neutral colors. And human beings, and then you have underneath the earth, it's like dark, red,
demonic,
pitchforks, you're in a cave, somewhere like that. Yeah. So I think lots of, whether we know it or not, I think our view of the afterlife and heaven and hell is shaped by those kind of cultural ideas. So I remember growing up, and it was just, you know, hey, you want to go to heaven, right? You want it, that's the end goal, that you get to heaven.
Yeah.
And, you know, we sing, "Oh, fly away, oh, glory," right? And that's, you know, this earth isn't my home and I'm flying away. And you kind of go, well, sure, there's elements of truth to that. I don't know if we literally fly
soar
away.
Soar up on wings as eagles.
Well, even like, so this past Christmas break, my brother-in-law introduced me to a movie, and I think it's called Ordinary Guy, and it's on YouTube, and it's like a Christian movie made in the 70s. And it's about, you know, this guy that becomes a Christian. But at the end scene is, he's like, it's unintentionally funny. He's like, he, and this sounds terrible that I'm laughing, but you have to watch it. He's murdered in like a gang fight.
Yeah.
That, and he's not in the gang, but he accidentally gets murdered. And then at his funeral, afterwards, you see like, he shoots up through the casket to the sky, and that's him going to heaven at the end of the movie. And it's kind of like, huh, is that what happens? I'm not sure. So, biblically speaking, then, like, I don't know where you want to go first. I would say the goal of Christianity is not that we all end up in heaven and earth doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
The biblical view of kind of the end goal is that heaven and earth completely overlap.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it, because I think that no matter where we start and no matter what we look at, if we look at the end goal of what God's plan for humanity and earth is, it's restoration, not destruction.
So
we see in the Old Testament, right at the beginning, Genesis, God creates heaven and earth.
Mm-hmm.
He creates, you know, he's living in this space. He creates humans. He's living among us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good. Sin enters the world and it fractures that. Adam and Eve are kicked out of the Garden of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
We see a very literal barrier placed there. And then we kind of, like, we're described a physical location of where the garden was, but we don't, like... Like, they're kicked out of that. But then throughout the rest of the narrative of the Bible, we see God's plan for restoration. And we see him talk about, or not talk about, but we see the imagery of Christians defeating sin and defeating darkness through the power of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always to restore. It's never to destroy what was there. Mm-hmm. It's to make it new again.
Yeah.
And even the language that we see, say, in Revelation 21, when John, I believe it's John, right, sees the new heaven and the new earth.
Mm-hmm.
It could be really confusing if you think that we're just going to go chill in heaven for the rest of eternity, when John specifically says that there's a new heaven and a new earth that he saw, right?
Yeah.
Because then what happens to earth if we're all up in heaven? Why would God make a new earth if he doesn't need it because we're in heaven, right? So there's a bunch of conflicting things to just say that heaven is the end game goal and earth doesn't matter at all.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually it's interesting, that kind of viewpoint that earth doesn't matter and heaven matters, right? It's kind of this idea that the spiritual is what's really important and the physical is not as important. And that's actually Gnosticism, which was a really early, they labeled it a heresy in the early church, but it's actually becoming popular again. Mm-hmm. And Gnosticism, there's a bunch of ideas in it, but one of the ideas is the physical world is bad and the spiritual world is good. And in Gnosticism, there's this idea of like a secret hidden knowledge that you can access, which you hear lots in Christian circles today.
Yeah.
But that's what it kind of sounds like, right?
Yeah.
The end goal is heaven. Heaven good, earth bad.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like God's going to just destroy earth because it's so corrupt. But I think you're right that the picture that we see throughout really the whole Bible is that God wants to restore the universe, right? It was it was broken and fractured and messed up because of sin. And so the goal is that God kind of restores and fixes that and makes it new. And there was a book that I read called The Explicit Gospel. Mm. And he talks about that sometimes Christians were in danger of, he calls it focusing on the gospel on the ground, which he says it's like this zoomed in gospel where it's just about me and my salvation.
Yeah.
And we've done that, right? It's just about you and your personal relationship with Jesus, and you gotta become, and you know, Jesus died for you, which is all true. But he said, you know, Jesus died, yes, for your sin, but he also died to begin this restoration of the universe. It's not just about you, right?
Yeah.
It's about God restoring all things back to their original glory. It's not zoomed in so much. And so it's to have this balance of, yes, it's about my relationship with Jesus and my sins forgiven, but it's also about the entire cosmos.
Yeah.
Right? It's quite huge in scope.
Yeah.
And so even early on, it's amazing, like we talked about this, you know, even in Isaiah, there's mention of God creating a new heaven and a new earth, right? Yeah. In Isaiah 65:17, he says, "For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former things shall not be remembered or come into mind." And then later on, he says, Isaiah 65. Well, that's not the right verse, but anyways, so you have some of these instances already early on, right, in the book of Isaiah, and you go, okay, so the goal is a new heavens and a new earth. Oh, that's where it was. It talks about the wolf and the lamb lying down together, and you know, this peace and all that kind of stuff. That's all this imagery of this new earth that's coming.
Mm-hmm.
So then why don't you take us to, I don't know, are there places in the New Testament that talk about the new heavens and the new earth?
I'm pretty sure First Peter that talks about it?
Second Peter.
Yeah, because you're not wrong. It is throughout the Bible that we see the authors talk about God promising this new heaven and this new earth. And so... Yeah, it's kind of cool to see that. I know that for me, I can think of terminology around new heaven and new earth or concepts about that only being like a revelation book of the Bible type idea. Mm-hmm. The rest of that is kind of like, oh, well, the rest is just, you know, how we got to that point, right?
Yeah.
But it's true. It's pointed to throughout the rest of the Bible.
Yeah, so like 2 Peter 3 is one verse that Peter's talking about the day of the Lord, which is, you know, the return of Jesus. And at the very end of that section, he says in verse 13, "But according to his promise, we are waiting for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells." So Peter's like, okay, according to his promise, so Jesus's promise, we're waiting for this, right? And he connects it to the return of Jesus. The day of the Lord is when Jesus is going to, you know, usher this all in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought of Romans 8. I don't know if you remember that one, but
therefore,
Romans 8
talks, no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. Oh, and then keep going and somewhere in there.
Yeah. But like the second half talks about this future glory, right? And he talks about that even creation itself is like groaning.
Yeah.
And it says not even just creation, but we ourselves are groaning as we eagerly await for the redemption of our bodies. So even like the idea of redemption is not just your spirit. Like your spirit's redeemed and you go float in heaven with Jesus. Paul says in Romans 8, like even our bodies are just longing for their redemption.
Yeah.
So, and this kind of points to the idea of the resurrection, right? Like, I don't know if people listening, and I remember when I realized this, I went, man, I've never heard this before. Like, our eternity with Jesus is physical.
Yeah.
Like, I remember really believing that my body does not matter. And I would say things like, or hear things like, oh, that's just a temporary home. It's just a shell. Your real person is the spirit or whatever. And then I just believed that we were just kind of spirits forever with Jesus.
Yeah, I remember definitely being confused by that. Like, are we are we just little floaty orbs in heaven? And like, what does that look like then? Why are there sidewalks if we're just floaty orbs? Why are there streets if we're floaty orbs? Why do we have dwelling places in heaven if we're just floaty orbs that exist forever? Like, what?
And then, yeah, I remember reading 1 Corinthians 15, and Paul talks about the resurrection of our bodies and this idea that eternity is going to be a physical existence. Like, you will have a body, right? Yeah. You will, I think, you will eat and drink. I mean, Jesus, in his perfect resurrected body, ate fish, hung out with his disciples before he ascended into heaven, and he was the prototype. For lack of a better term, he was the first
perfect prototype
of those raised from the dead, right? Yeah. He was the first one who is, and Jesus has a physical body now in heaven, whatever that looks like. So I remember just my mind being blown, going, I've never heard that eternity was, you know, dirt and soil and mountains and, you know, flesh,
tangible
and
things.
Yeah, tangible things, but just in a perfected state, with no sin,
something made whole. God's presence will be among everything, right? Because when sin entered the world, that relationship where the Bible Project talks about this in their video description of heaven and earth, where heaven or God's space, which would be heaven, and earth, what we know now, was fractured. They were in a sense broken apart. And so then Jesus brought parts of that together, but when Jesus returns, it's going to usher in that being back together completely, right? So it's I think too, it from a very literal standpoint, it makes sense that what we see now will be restored. I think that I kind of always always thought of heaven being ushered in as this sense of like the new heaven and the new earth would be a completely different space in outer space or in a different universe. And like, as all the Christians are leaving Earth, you just see this like Star Wars Alderaan.
Yes.
And that would be the suffering. And like that Earth has passed away and the new one comes and you'd like blip up to it out of hyperspace and poof, there you are. Wow. Away you go.
Quite
like
nerdy.
Quite. But it doesn't make sense. Like if you think about it, why would Jesus have died for you here so that there can be spiritual transformation and physical restoration here on earth if he's just going to destroy that all? And we don't see that's not a pattern that we see with God's character. Like in the story of Noah's Ark, God destroys a lot of stuff with the flood because of sin, but he promises to never do that again. And even though he destroyed stuff, he didn't destroy everything. He didn't clean slate it entirely. He wiped out humanity other than Noah and his family. But he still gave a chance, and like I said, he promised not to do that again. So if we look at heaven and earth and expect God to absolutely destroy earth and all the sinners on it who don't believe it, I don't think that specific picture fits with who we see God to be. I think that restoration in the sense of seeing God as God who wants to bring new life to what is already there is a more accurate biblical view.
Yeah, I think the confusion is that it's the Bible talks about a new heaven and a new earth, and we just kind of go, you know, and it even talks about, because, you know, the old has passed away and blah, 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 blah. Even, yeah, if you read Revelation 21, this kind of near final vision that John has. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And then he sees the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And a loud voice says, "Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God." So I think sometimes the apocalyptic type language that is used is confusing, because you go, well, it sounds like God blows up earth and just makes a new one.
Yeah.
But how I think it's meant for us to view is, because even when you talk about, so even use the example of when you restore something, it is like new, right? When I take a, you know, if you like home renovation shows, for instance, and you have a run down junk of a house, and oftentimes I hear them say, yeah, they got good bones though, right? Whatever that means. But they'll restore it. They're not completely demolishing the house.
Yeah.
And at the end, it's a new house. But it's still the old one, just restored, right? Yeah. I even remember a few years ago, my wife, we had this old dresser with, like, you know, six drawers, and it was this big, huge dresser, and we wanted to sell it. So my wife restored it. She sanded it down. She painted it. She put new hardware on it. And you would look at it and you would go, man, that's a new dresser. Yeah. It's not, right? It's still the old one, but it's just been completely restored. So I think we got to get past that language of, like, you know, new heaven and new earth. And lots of people will say, well, have you read Revelation? It sounds like God beats up the earth pretty bad. But again, you got to remember, like, Revelation is apocalyptic literature. It's symbolism and imagery.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, does God literally, you know, throw a mountain of blood into the sea? Well, no, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But even that, like, the earth being made new through tribulation and fire and a refining type thing. So I think you're right that it's a restoring back to what it was meant to be in the garden, right?
Yeah.
And I love that, because the Bible just comes full circle. It starts with God dwelling with man, and this perfect relationship, and then you see sin come in and fracture that, and then you read 66 books of getting back to Revelation 21, God will dwell with man.
Yeah.
And so it's an amazing story that you read about, of God chasing after people and God fixing the problem himself, right? Because we just go from worse to worse. So human beings just wreck everything because of sin.
Yeah.
And then God himself comes and he fixes it. And I like what you said about the Bible Project video. And even now, Jesus is doing his work of restoration, right? In people's hearts, and then we're called to join him in this work of restoration. And then when he comes back, that's when it kind of, like, fully gets ushered
in. He finalizes it.
I
think that it brings a new like, for us Christians, that should help us hold on to the hope that we have in some ways, because, like, even as a young Christian, if you just think that heaven is this far off place and you have no idea what it's going to look like, it can almost seem like why would I do that then? Right. Cause we don't know what it looks like. There can be so many questions then that our questions will overrule what we actually know in our minds, kind of. Right. But if we can look at it and think of it in the manner of restoration, and that God is going to usher in this new heaven and new earth here, and that we're a part of that.
Yeah.
I would say that it brings light to the purpose that Christ has given us to go and tell people of him, because it's no longer just this, you know, little hunky dory thing that you're supposed to do where it's like, hey, to be a good Christian, tell people about Jesus. It's like, no, like, you're actually telling people about this new heaven and new earth that Jesus is offering. And you're telling them about how to be a part of that. Right.
Yep.
Which is beautiful, because salvation is not just meant for you. Did God mean it for you? Yes. But it's not just you. It's not just about the one person. It's about the people. Even when you look at scripture, it never once says that God is saving Abraham. It says that Abraham is going to be the person that God brings a nation out of, right?
Yeah.
It's always a larger scale than just one individual.
Mm-hmm.
Even when Jesus came, it you know, if you believe, then you're saved. But he did that for the world, mm-hmm. not just for you. And so restoration is not just so that you can be in heaven. It's so that everyone who believes can be in heaven. And that's why a calling where we get to present that information and be ambassadors of that is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, like speaking practically about why this matters, I think when you realize that it's not just the spiritual that matters, it's the physical as well. Mm-hmm. I think, and I've got to be careful here because I don't want you to hear me wrong. I think lots of times the church has only cared about, hey, say the prayer so you're in, right?
Yeah.
We care about your soul.
Yeah.
And we want you to spend eternity with Jesus. And yes and amen. But I think sometimes we do that and then we just don't care about the physical person at all, right?
Yeah.
And we don't take care of their needs here and now, and we don't feed the poor, and we don't take care of our planet, and we don't. It's like we've separated it,
yeah,
to either you're a really hardcore Christian that cares about people's souls, or you're a social justice warrior.
Yeah.
And I hate that dichotomy, because I go, as Christians, shouldn't we care about justice and care about racism and care about, you know, and I know people are going to give pushback. Shouldn't we care about the environment, and shouldn't we care about, like,
yeah,
you know, the poor? I hate that we have this dichotomy, like, well, you're just not faithful to preach the gospel. I'm like, well, sure, if you never tell anyone about Jesus, then, well, yeah, you're not.
Yeah.
But Jesus calls us to take care of widows and orphans and to be good stewards. And so I think a full understanding of the end goal of a new heaven and a new earth, the fact that Jesus wants to restore everything, I think it kind of broadens our, yes, we want to tell people about Jesus, but then I also want to help bring life and restoration to their lives,
yeah,
and to their marriage. Not, yeah, to just go, well, you know what? I know your life is a mess, but you said the prayer, so at least you're going to heaven. It's,
yeah,
like, well, no, like, their life now.
Jesus and his death and resurrection was never meant to be a Band-Aid for people's issues.
Yeah.
It's meant to be a holistic,
yep,
physical and spiritual restoration, right?
Yep, totally.
And I think that we can say that, and I want to clarify that if you have been waiting for physical healing and you believe in Jesus, that doesn't mean that if you're waiting and waiting and waiting that it's not going to happen. Because I think that even if in your life right now, if you don't get that healing, that doesn't mean that promise is nullified. Because if you believe in Christ and you're fully restored when Christ returns, then that promise is fulfilled.
Yeah.
And so it's a coming promise. But that's not to say that it can't happen now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. We, especially in the American culture, like to think that the physical and the spiritual are completely separate.
Sure.
But we as humans were created as physical and spiritual beings.
And we will be for all eternity.
Yeah. So there's no disconnecting that, right?
Yeah.
So if, I remember this is something that was kind of made clear or started learning about when I was going through Conquer and struggling with sexual addiction. Cause I had been struggling with pornography and sexual addiction for years. And I remember people would come and, you know, for lack of a better term, slap a prayer on me and expect me to get better. Like, I would tell someone and physically speak to them and say, like, look, this is something I'm struggling with. Like, my brain chemistry was altered and all of that stuff. And they would say, oh, okay. And they would slap a prayer on me and expect me to walk away perfectly healed. Is that something that could have happened and can happen? Absolutely. I'm not saying that it can't.
Yeah.
But there was no physical, like, no tangible things that they would do to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not saying that to be a better Christian, that there is a physical step-by-step thing that you can do to get better at being a physical Christian. But God did create us as physical beings. Mm-hmm. So there are physical things that we can do that glorify God,
yeah,
because we're physical and spiritual, right? So when those things are connected,
yep.
and we recognize that and live as such, then I think that we're again turning back to what God created us to be as mm-hmm. physical and spiritual beings who live hand in hand with him.
Yeah. So then the question that I often get is like, okay, great. The end goal, Jesus comes back, physical existence forever, new heavens, new earth. Like, what about now? What happens when I die? Where's heaven now? Like, do I go to heaven now when I die? Am I just floaty, spirity now? Like, my body is in a tomb, or a tomb. We don't do tombs. Is in the ground.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be cool if we did tombs?
Your family
still?
Doesn't do tombs?
Just like a big, what do they call that? A mausoleum or a big tomb? That's what I want. So I get that question. I got it last week, actually, even. Like, what happens in this in-between time?
Corlin? That's a good question. Yeah. I think that if I had to, like, on first response to that, I think I would say that to some extent it doesn't matter. Like, that's not to if you've asked this question, because I know I have too. I'm not saying that it's not a valid question.
Sure.
What I'm saying is that don't get caught up on that. Sure. It's something that we definitely can ask and look into, but don't get caught up on that.
Yep.
Now, to actually answer the question, to my understanding, and I might be wrong because I haven't actually studied this a whole bunch, the Bible talks about Sheol, which to me sounds kind of, and maybe don't take this too literally, but it kind of sounds like a waiting room where we are with Jesus, but God hasn't ushered in this new heaven and new earth yet. So it's not like you're sitting there waiting in like a doctor's waiting room, waiting for heaven to come down. And it's kind of awkward because, you know, you're like, hey, Paul, like, what's up? Like, no, it's not like that. But I don't know. I haven't really fully wrapped my head around it. So that's kind of how I picture it. But I don't know. Do you have?
Yeah. I mean, I think biblically there's actually only a couple of places that talk about this. Jesus on the cross. Right, he says to the thief next to him, "Today you'll be with me in paradise."
Yeah,
and so there's this idea that, you know, that thief who confessed Jesus, he's going to die, but he'll be with Jesus. In Philippians 1, Paul talks about. He says in verse 23, "I'm hard pressed between the two. My desire is to depart and be with Christ, for that's far better. But to remain in the flesh is more necessary on your account." So. There's Paul, I think his understanding was, when I die, I'm with Jesus.
Yeah.
And then I forget, it's in Luke, but it's the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. Oh, boy. I'm not going to be able to find it. But anyways, if you remember that, you know, this rich man and then Lazarus, and Lazarus goes to heaven.
Luke 16,
not 13, you idiot.
Come on.
So Lazarus, we're told is the poor man dies and was carried by the angels to Abraham's side. And then the rich man dies and was buried and he's in Hades. So I think there's a couple places where it seems to show us, and there's not a whole lot, but it seems to show us that if you are a follower of Jesus, when you die, you're with Jesus. It's called paradise. It's called Abraham's side or bosom, which is a weird, yay, I went to Abraham's bosom. But it's not called heaven, which is interesting to me. It's called paradise. It's called, basically all Paul says is, I just get to go be with Jesus, which I think is the most important thing. That if you are a follower of Jesus, when you die, you will be with Jesus. And then if you're not a follower of Jesus, when you die, it seems to me that there's talk about Hades, which I would more call Hades the waiting room for unbelievers.
Hmm.
Because at the end, it says that death and Hades are then thrown into hell, essentially.
Oh, okay.
That's in Revelation 20. It says, the sea gave up the dead who were in it. Death and Hades gave up the dead who were in them, and they were judged. Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death. which is, you know, an eternal death.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that, yes, when you die now, your body and your spirit are separated, right? My body goes in the grave, or you're cremated, or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
You're buried. And then your spirit is with Jesus, if you are a follower of Jesus. And if not, your spirit's in Hades, whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Then at the return of Jesus, you are reunited with your body again. How does that look? I have no idea.
Yeah.
Right. And people have said, well, then we shouldn't get cremated because we got to protect. I'm like, give it 6 months and your body decays anyways. So it does, that doesn't matter, but you're somehow given a new body. And if you are a follower of Jesus, you will reign with him forever in the new heavens and the new earth. And if you had rejected Jesus, you will, whatever that looks like, be thrown into hell.
Yeah.
And it's an eternal physical torment.
Yeah.
So I think on one hand, it's encouraging to us as believers, because usually that question is asked when someone has lost a loved one.
Yeah.
That was the case last week. Someone had, I can't remember it, a parent or a grandparent had died, and they were wrestling with where are they right now?
Yeah.
So as a believer, if you die, you are with Jesus.
Yeah.
Whatever that looks like. Right?
Yeah.
And I think that won't be important, the details of what it looks like, because you're with Jesus. I
mean, yeah.
Who, that's the best. And you are with him until he returns, right? And then you're with him forever. So that's no wonder Paul's like, man, I would way rather just leave and go be with Jesus.
Yeah. And I think what you said there is a better way of saying what I was trying to say when we first brought up the question.
Sure.
The details don't necessarily matter.
Yeah.
It's like,
because, people say, well, what will we be doing? And it was like, well, will I necessarily remember my aunt and my grandma? I'm like, well, you might. I don't know. But
you'll be with Jesus.
You'll
and that's what matters.
Jesus. You'll see him face to face. Okay, that's the most important thing, right?
Yep.
So I know, like, Seventh-day Adventists believe that you just kind of have soul sleep. You just go to sleep. Well, it doesn't seem that way.
Yeah.
Because Jesus, you know, tells the thief, you're going to be with me. If he's just asleep until the end, then he's not with Jesus, technically. He's just fast asleep. Although, as a parent, soul sleep sounds pretty good right now. I don't think biblically you can make a case that you're just kind of asleep until Jesus returns. It sounds like you are with Jesus in paradise, and then you'll be with him forever. So I don't know. Any final thoughts or how this, other ways this applies to us or why this matters? I mean, a really simple thing is it matters because we want to get, you know, our doctrine right.
Yeah.
We don't want to tell people and teach and believe things that aren't necessarily true.
Yeah.
Right. And I think I've even been really careful. So here's a practical thing, you know, as a parent, you know, and I'm not saying that any parents have done this, but sometimes it's like, you know, hey, little Susie, when you die, do you want to come to heaven with mommy and daddy, or do you want to burn forever in hell or whatever? Right.
Yeah.
And so I think I've even been tried really hard to make sure my what I teach my kids is accurate.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want them to have this view that, hey, this world doesn't matter and this life doesn't matter. All that matters is you float around with Jesus forever. So I talk lots about, like, we want to be with Jesus, right? And I remember there's been two or three times when a death has happened and we've talked about, you know, that person is with Jesus, right? Where, whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
Right? So, I don't know. Any other thoughts?
I think a thought that comes to mind with this is that when you're trying to explain stuff like this, or when we're trying to explain stuff like this either to your kids or to other people, is you're not, when you're trying to teach someone about God, you're not trying to teach them a step-by-step. So, like, This is a horrible example, but I'm going to throw it out there anyways and see how it goes. If you're teaching your kid, for example, you're not trying to teach a dog to sit so that you get results.
Yeah.
You don't dangle heaven in front of them and say, okay, sit, like, this is what you want to do if you want the treat. Cause it's not that. It's a very, like, what you're trying to do is holistically teach them, like, this is what we hope for. This is what we long for. Like, this is truth. And then those decisions to do certain things that God has called them to do comes as a fruit of knowing that, rather than as a, like, they won't do those actions in hopes of getting that reward then.
Yeah.
Like with a, well, maybe they'll miss it, or maybe they won't quite get it. It'll be something that they will strive towards if they have a complete understanding. So I think the best way to teach about Jesus is to be like Jesus, like the Bible calls us to, right? To live a life that he calls us to live, to lead by example rather than just hanging treats in front of people trying to get them to follow what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can't remember who said it, but you know, no one's in heaven because they're scared of hell.
Yeah.
Right? And I think, unfortunately, that's often how it's pitched.
Yeah.
Here, listen to how awful hell is. Now, do you want that? Well, then no. You got to come to heaven.
Yeah.
But people are in heaven and with Jesus because they love Jesus, right? So even how we talk about heaven and hell, like, I never want to scare my kids into heaven, right?
Because
then they don't really love Jesus. They're just scared of
fire
and sulfur and whatever, right?
Yeah.
So even how we talk about things, like, I when we talk with people, like, we don't shy away about, you know, if you don't repent, like, there is God's judgment.
Yeah.
But I think far more is like, look how amazing Jesus is.
Yeah.
Don't you want to love him and serve him and be with him forever? So
yeah.
I think it even changes some of the way we have conversations like that. So hopefully that's been helpful and at least interesting.
Yeah.
But if you have questions,
comments,
comments or things that you want us to talk about, you can always message us. Or email us, or somehow get a hold of us. Make sure that you subscribe in iTunes, or one day we'll be on YouTube again once we can video these things. But for now, on iTunes and Spotify and all those places you find podcasts, leave us a 5-star review.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to you next week.